The Gospel of John, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." The church is held together not only by a common confession, but by intersecting bloodlines and marriages. Customarily, sons followed their fathers into the ministry, and brothers joined brothers. Among Missouri's famous clans are the Peepers, the Grebners, the Fearbringers, the Restmeyers, the Preusses. Extra glue is added to the body ecclesiastic by daughters and sisters of ministers marrying other ministers. C.F.W. Walther's sister married the sister of missionary immigrant pastor Ernst Kyle. Blood relationships exacerbated the tragedy of the Synod's confessional disintegration in the 1970s. Confession and blood opposed each other, and so were fulfilled the words of Jesus that a man's enemy was a member of one's own household. In spite of all our efforts, believing parents will not beget believing children, and sons of pastors will not follow in their father's footsteps. The families of Adam, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Eli, Samuel, David, and Solomon were hardly ideal religious families. Even the most deliberately Christian family can be religiously dysfunctional. And so it was with the family of Mary and Joseph. Their younger children rejected the claims of their older brother to the point of saying that he was out of his mind. Occasionally, some families do work, even though no family works perfectly. Zebedee gave us the sons of Thunder, but eventually James and John became apostles, and the younger wrote 5 books of our New Testament. Another prosperous fisherman called John gave us Andrew and Peter. The older brother heard John the Baptist preach, and without being prompted with miracles, concluded that his fellow disciple by the name of Jesus of Nazareth was the Christ. Faith is never self-ignited, but Andrew's faith came close to it. Peter's faith was not self-ignited. He had to be told there was a man by the name of Jesus, led to where he was, and then told that he was the promised Messiah. Andrew might have had second thoughts about what he had done because Jesus chose Peter and not Andrew to be the prince of the apostles. The words, "You will be called Cephas, the man of the rock," must have stung in Andrew's ears. At first it was Andrew and Peter, and for the rest of history it was the other way around. Aggressive people can be annoying, but it was perhaps Peter's take charge attitude that Jesus saw was necessary to turn an unorganized movement into a church. Peter was primus inter pares, first among equals. Andrew was an equal among equals and relegated to being designated Peter's brother, the first officer, but not the captain. It was unfair. Andrew, not Peter, was the first one on board. But as Dr. McKenzie says, life is not fair. God is not an equal opportunity employer. We all get opportunities, but each of us get different ones. Being someone's father, brother, son, grandson, nephew is a Missouri Synod tradition. I went to school with Walter and Harold Rast, and their nephew is our academic dean. One relative of the Lutheran Hour speaker was introduced as the brother of Ozzie Hoffman, and the other as son. The old nepotism is petering out. Most of you were not brought up in pastors' homes, so your fame or lack of it will not depend upon being someone's relative. But the church grows by bringing relatives to church. So does the ministry. Amazingly, the most faithful churchgoers don't ask visiting relatives and friends to come to church with them. That's one aspect of the Andrew Peter story. Even less than perfect families can be seedbeds of the faith. Some of you were brought to faith by your wife. Sadly, fewer pastors maintain the tradition in expecting their sons to study for the ministry. Church bonds are strengthened when unattached seminarians marry the daughters and sisters of their pastors or fellow seminarians. When faith and family are united, the hymn, "Blessed be the tie that binds," takes on a double meaning. James never called himself the brother of Jesus, but he was. Jude took advantage of his relationship to Jesus by calling himself the brother of James. Everybody knew James was the Lord's brother. This was like an honorary doctor's degree. No substance, but it opened doors. According to tradition, Andrew was crucified on a cross in the shape of the letter X on the north side of the Black Sea in what is now the heartlands of Eastern Orthodoxy. Appropriately, his martyrdom is memorialized by the diagonal crossbar found on the lower parts of the crosses of the Russian Orthodox Church. His X-shaped cross is also found against the blue background for the flag of Scotland and superimposed on the red cross of the fictitious St. George to form the British Union Jack. That blue background became the blue on our flag on which 50 white stars are placed. His X-shaped cross is halfway between the upright cross of Jesus and the inverse cross of Peter, so that even in death, he mediates his brother to Jesus. As a minister of word and sacrament, Andrew would have been an ideal Lutheran. He preached Christ to Peter, and more than that, he was a theologian in bringing inquisitive Greeks to Jesus. He was a minister of the Eucharist, and an extraordinary one at that. He called Jesus' attention to the boy with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, with which the 5,000 were miraculously fed. The boy was the acolyte who brought the gifts forward to the celebrant, who by his death became the sacrifice, which was encapsulated in the loaves. Andrew was the master of ceremonies, setting out the bread for the miracle, and then he was the deacon in distributing what Jesus had made sacred. The miracle near the Sea of Galilee is continued in this place, and Andrew is as much here as he was then. At least that's what the proper preface says, "Therefore, with angels and archangels and all the company of heaven."